Hello, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRF Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host, and I have got a great guest to interview this morning. I'd like to introduce Rachel Dunham. Dunham, is it Dunham or Dunham, Rachel?
Dunham.
Rachel Dunham, and Rachel, you are Community Engagement Coordinator for the Xerces Society. That's the Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So good to have you. Listeners, as you know, many of our recordings are live, but some are pre-recorded, and this is one of them. And so I'm looking at Rachel across to Zoom, and she looks very bright and shiny and motivated. So I can't wait to start talking with you. Rachel, let's start by having you tell us a bit about yourself, how you came to be interested in working with pollinators, and how you got to the position of community engagement coordinator.
Yeah, so it was kind of a roundabout way. I have always loved wildlife and knew I wanted to do something with animals since I was a kid. So my education background is in biology, ecology, and wildlife conservation. And then I worked as a naturalist actually for the Park Service and the Forest Service in Alaska. And then I worked for Princess Cruise Lines as a naturalist to Hawaii and Alaska. And I went back to grad school and did some research after that and decided that I missed people. And so I started working at a wildlife refuge and kind of fell into working with volunteers and doing conservation work in that area. And then I heard of the Xerces Society while I was at the refuge in Oregon, actually. And I think from my experience, I've worked a lot with bigger sort of charismatic species like bears and whales and things that everybody is so excited about. And I think pollinators and other insects and invertebrates are sort of that animal group that kind of get forgotten about. I think there's a couple that are pretty charismatic, like monarch butterflies and bumblebees, but I think there's sort of this general like, ooh, like creepy crawly, insects and different things, or people are afraid of bees. So I really liked the challenge of working with a group of animals that I hadn't really worked with before. And they're also super important. And so when this position opened up with Xerces, I thought, what a great opportunity. And because it's a nationwide organization, I thought, wow, we can reach so many more people. And they were really looking for someone with my skill set. And I love how practical it is to help pollinators. You can donate to organizations who work with polar bears or whales, but you may never see one in your lifetime, but you can literally put a plant in your yard and see bees come to it. And I think that that type of impact, to be able to see it and experience it, is really, really cool. So that really drew me to Xerces and to this position. It'll be 5 years in July.
Wow, and you still sound really motivated and excited to be there. And it is amazing. We'll move on in just a moment, but from what you've just said, I found myself thinking about the fact that so many of those charismatic large species really rely on the smaller guys in order to be able to make their own livelihoods. For example, I just read this, so now I'm quoting, but for example, the salmon that the bears eat have to have bugs, or there's no bears without the bugs. And then I also read that one in three bites that we eat are a result of pollination, and that's an amazing fact, I think. Yeah, it really. So
Yeah, it definitely is.
yeah, all right. So we'll move on to the organization. Xerces Society, it's such a name. It's like a crazy and rather lofty name. And a friend of mine, when I was saying this, that I was having this interview today, a friend of mine said, "How did they pick that name? Was it because the Bee Gees was already taken?" No, tell us the background of the name.
Oh, the Bee Gees. I haven't heard of them in a long time. Yeah, so our name comes from the Xerces blue butterfly, which I believe Xerces was a Greek god or a Persian king, sorry, a Persian king. And that butterfly was named after the Persian king. But the Xerces blue butterfly, its home was in the sand dunes of the Bay Area in California. And it was the first butterfly that we know of to go extinct due to human activity because it lost its habitat. And that was back, the last one was seen flying around in the early 1940s. So that sort of inspired the organization to help prevent other invertebrates from that same fate. And so it's from the Xerces blue butterfly. And yeah, it's a very interesting name. When I tell people, they say, what? I'm sorry, can you repeat the word?
It's kind of a tongue twister, really. All right, well, let's talk about the Xerces Society. You've begun with a bit of its history, but what is the mission? What are you all about?
So we're just over 50 years old, and the mission is, I mean, it's simple and complex, but the simple part of it is that we literally just conserve, not just, it's a big job, but we work to conserve insects and other invertebrates and their habitats. And that's everything from counting them and figuring out what their population numbers are to trying to help farmers to put in hedgerows to increase the number of beneficial insects to getting neighbors. To reduce pesticide use to help protect pollinators and doing outreach and education. So we do a lot of different work with a lot of different audiences, but it's all really to conserve invertebrates. That's where our focus is.
Yeah, and of course, right now the pollinators are getting so much attention, but you sounds like your mission is much larger than just pollinators.
It's a big part of the work that we do. Our pollinator program is huge, and our other programs also work with pollinators. But yeah, we work with freshwater mussels, we work with fireflies, other invertebrates as well. But yeah, pollinators are a huge part of our job.
So, in case people aren't getting the drift yet, I'll just ask a very direct question. Why should we care about invertebrates and pollinators and mollusks, etc.?
Yeah, it's a great question. You kind of hit on it a little bit earlier, but I mean, truly, I think of invertebrates, especially insects, as sort of being this like the ultimate keystone species collectively. Like, if we lost invertebrates, our world would not be anywhere near it is now. You think everything from ecological services, and those are things that they provide us directly. 85% of the world's flowering plants, they're responsible for reproduction. Two-thirds of the world's crop species are pollinated. Native pollinators alone are estimated to bring in $3 billion per year to the US. I mean, we get so much from them. And then, as you mentioned, a lot of the animals we love depend on insects. So fish, a lot of fish at some point in their life cycle depend on insects for food. A lot of birds will eat insects at some point in their life cycle, but then they will also eat a lot of fruits and seeds that come from pollinated plants. And then this is a fun fact because I love bears. But the grizzly bears at Yellowstone, they actually eat miller moths. And there's a particular time of year when they hatch. There's a huge hatch, and they eat up to 40,000 moths a day, which is crazy. But you just think a grizzly bear being able to sustain a certain amount of its life each year on moths. I mean, it's just. Yeah, I mean, it affects everything, and the amount of biomass it carries is huge, and the beauty of it and the inspiration you get from seeing a monarch butterfly or fireflies light up at night. I know so many people say that was a huge part of their childhood and something they loved, and hearing a bumblebee buzz, they're just so important on so many different levels.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I've got this image of in my mind of a grizzly bear just sort of like dancing around, snip, snip, snipping for the I would think that would be a long day for him to get enough food. But interesting, right? Wow. So, you obviously have many areas of focus, but is there one area that's primary for this organization?
I would say that we have three primary conservation focuses, and then we have our outreach and education program that I'm a part of. So we have our pollinator program, and that was the first program at Xerces. Not that they called it that when they started. We've grown a lot over the past few years, in the last 50. But our pollinator program, they work with farmers, they work with public lands, private landowners to help maintain and build pollinator habitat. And we also have a lot of conservation biologists that we partner with the federal governments through NCRS. And so we do a lot of work with them as well. And we're, like I said, across the country. And then we have our endangered species program that's more focused on specific species. So that's where our Atlas program falls in. We work with bumblebees, we work with monarchs. We work with freshwater mussels, with fireflies, and that's really to better understand what are their numbers, what can people do, getting people involved in community science. And then our third conservation program is our pesticide program. And they do a lot of work to reduce pesticide use, whether that's on a city level or a state level, working with individuals and as far as what plants they're purchasing and if they've been pre-treated with pesticides. So those are kind of our three main programs, and they all really collaborate closely together. and support each other. And then the outreach and education program, our job is really to get the word out and to help communicate and get people involved in that. And so we kind of work with all the different programs.
Yeah, getting people on the ground, people just living in their communities, working to help all the invertebrates, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Pollinators was one of your first things that you worked with, and it's something that's so top of mind these days. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Who are the heavy lifters in the pollination world? I gotta think they're not butterflies. I feel like they're bees, but I don't know enough. Tell us more.
Yeah, it's a good question. There are a lot of different types of pollinators. We have beetles, butterflies, moths, flies, wasps, bees. Those are the ones that we focus on. But really the most important ones are bees, because the females specifically go out and they deliberately are gathering pollen to take back to their nests for their offspring. And they also exhibit a behavior called flower consistency. And that means that they repeatedly visit one particular plant species on any given foraging trip. So that really increases the rate of pollination for those particular plants, where a lot of these other pollinators, they're not specifically getting pollen. It sort of happens by accident. They're still important, of course. But bees are really, like you said, the heavy lifters. They have particular structures on their body to carry the pollen. Yeah, so definitely bees.
Yeah, I figured it would be that way. And then in the bee world, are bees themselves or bumblebees, is there one, I mean, are non-native honeybees really doing it all these days, or do the native ones have a lot to do with
it? Oh, that's a tricky question. We see honeybees as an agricultural species. They're very important for crop reproduction. But as you said, they're not native. And so they're really, we see them as a managed species, like another, like cows or chickens. So when we talk about, pollinator conservation, we really try to focus on the native bees. And as far as like who the important pollinators among the bees, I think they all serve a really important role depending on what you're interested in pollinating, whether it's squash or apples or almonds. I mean, that's really going to be based on what the best pollinator is for that, like the alkali bee. And can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you just went away for about 2 seconds. So maybe you were just talking about, was it the elk? Did I hear alkaloid bee?
The alkali bee. Yeah, sorry, I got a call and my headphones are connected, but it went away. So
yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, the alkali bee pollinates alfalfa, and a lot of cows eat alfalfa. So a lot of our dairy even is impacted by pollinators. So it really just depends on what you're thinking of as far as the pollination goes. But bees are just important. And I think biodiversity is very important. So the more types of bees we have and the healthier ecosystems we have, I think the better off we'll be with production of plants.
Yeah, I agree. Well, is most of your advice just about not overly spraying things that kill insects, and then working on habitat? What are the major factors in trying to maintain a healthy pollinator population?
Great question. So we have a campaign called Bring Back the Pollinators, and there's sort of four principles to that. And the first one is to plant pollinator-friendly flowers or nectar plants or host plants. So for people who do have access to green spaces or have yards or community gardens, we recommend planting at least three different native species of plants blooming throughout the season. So at any time during the growing season, you're going to have three different types of native plants blooming. Gives a good diversity, a good amount of time throughout the season, because different bees come out at different times throughout the year. And then the second part of that is to provide habitat, nesting habitat. And that could look like, don't trim your stems back in the wintertime. You could put up a mason bee house, kind of leave some untidy areas of your garden where you might have some compost or a leaf pile, leave the leaves, don't mow your lawn as often. This is all going to help provide nesting habitat. You know, if you see little holes in the ground, those might be, solitary nesting, ground nesting bees. So just leave those be. That's a really important part. And then the third one is to reduce or just don't use any pesticides. I think, people often think, oh, if you go to the store and it's on the shelf, it's safe, but that couldn't be further from the truth. Sometimes in some situations, there might be a specific invasive plant on a really large scale, and there's no way to get rid of it, then herbicides might be necessary. But in a lot of instances, if you just allow it to be a little messy, allow your garden to not be perfect, it's okay if some of your leaves have bite marks in them. They might actually be from bees getting nesting materials, and have a biodiversity of plants because you're going to bring in some beneficial insects, and those are going to eat those pests that you're trying to get rid of with pesticides anyways. So that's the third principle. And then the fourth is to share the word, put a sign up in your yard, talk to your neighbors about what you're doing. And then if you don't have, I think we make the assumption often like, oh, everybody has a yard, everyone has access to green space. And that's not always the case, especially in urban areas. A lot of people might be in apartment complexes or condos and they don't have that access. Get involved with community science programs, volunteer to a local park to pull invasive species or put in native plants. Get involved with your kids through an ex-kids program that we have. Get involved with Bee City. So there's a lot of different things. I know we might talk about that later, but there's just so much that people can do. And I think that's what's awesome about helping pollinators is literally everybody can do something. Even if it doesn't feel like a huge thing, it really is collectively.
Well, that brings me to the question then of a rural person versus an urban person. We often have tiny little areas, and here in Sandpoint, there are plenty of rural folks that have 10 or more acres. And one might think that that person living in the rural area would be more important than the urban person. Let's talk about that and ways that each homeowner or inhabitants can make a difference.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, if you're in a rural area and you have a lot of property that you can make pollinator habitat out of, that's awesome. And that would have a huge impact. But people in urban areas can have a huge impact as well. I mean, a single bee doesn't actually need that much space to thrive. And we like to think of it, we have a publication that has this really beautiful picture of kind of showing like the life of a bee in a day to kind of show where that bee might go. And if you think about it in your neighborhood, for example, instead of just seeing your yard as one yard, if you look at, oh, we have, this small forest nearby, or this other neighbor has these plants, you kind of think about it as a collective landscape that bees are going to go outside of your yard and use things outside of that. And so if everybody collectively puts out just a couple of plants, that's going to be a huge impact. Even if you have a balcony, you could put literally a planter box or one plant outside, and that's going to help. And if everybody does something, over the landscape of a neighborhood, that can really be impactful for bees. And so I think the challenges are different whether you're in an urban or suburban or rural area, but everybody, can collectively do something.
Our city of Sandpoint is a progressive city in many environmental areas, and our library has made a pollinator garden, and our small local arboretum has done the same. How do you find governmental entities to be, in general, are cities working toward helping our invertebrates and pollinators?
Yeah, we have an amazing program called Bee City, and you can find out more information if you just Google Bee City or Bee Campus, it'll pop up. And we work with cities and their city council, and a lot of government agencies will be part of that committee. And basically, you're required to either build or maintain pollinator habitat, reduce pesticide use, create like an IPM or an integrated pest management program, and then do some outreach and education. And we have, I can't remember the exact number, I believe we have several hundred bee cities now in almost every state and bee campuses. And it's really just, it's a certification program. So you're really committing yourself to these actions. And then you have affiliates. So it can be people in the government or part of nonprofits or just community citizens that want to help. And they volunteer their time to make sure that, you're reaching these commitments and being a part of this program. But it's a great way to bring the communities together and to really make a difference. And I think for these cities, the government agencies have been really receptive and been on board with these changes. It's really grassroots within the city and the communities. It's really cool to see, and it's grown a lot over the past couple of years.
Yeah, that is great to hear. That's a sort of a systemic program that Xerces is offering throughout the country. I think it's wonderful. And there's another one. I don't know if this is throughout the entire country, but it's in our area, and that's the Bumblebee Atlas program. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, the Atlas program, it's really wild because I started, like I said, about 5 years ago in the Pacific Northwest. Bumblebee Atlas program was the only Atlas program available. And of course, that's the one that's applicable to your area. But now we have several different Atlas programs across the country, and it's becoming really popular and growing. And it's just a really fun way to get involved. And so if the basically the program, you go through training and it's all offered online virtually. And there's a couple training dates coming up if you go to PNW, which is for Pacific Northwest BumblebeeAtlas.org. You can find information about the trainings. There's one April 15th and May 17th, and they're a little bit different. The April 15th is required, but there's also recordings on our YouTube channel in case you miss it. But you go through these trainings and you get to learn about bumblebees and their habitat, and then you learn about the protocols of how you catch them and do surveys with them. It's a catch and release program. So then you adopt a grid and you just have to survey the grid twice throughout the year and then you submit the data. And the trainings go over all the information you need for this. But this information has really been impactful and helpful for us when we look at policies, when we're trying to list bumblebees as endangered. And there's just so much we don't know about bees in general. And this is helping us understand what the population are, what types of bees, where we're seeing them. It's really an amazing program. So if you want to get involved, I highly recommend it. It's really fun. I feel like it's a great thing to do with families, if you're traveling even. But yeah, definitely check out the Bumblebee Atlas.
Go ahead and give us the website again, the
It's
address.
PNW, bumblebeeatlas.org.
Okay, and that it does sound like a really fun and exciting way to help understand bumblebees. And there are quite a few species in Idaho, so there are a few that people need to learn to identify. Some really big ones.
Yeah, they're not out in Missoula. I haven't seen any bumblebees yet, but down here in Oregon, I saw my first bumblebee of the season, and it's the queens, and they're really big and they're so fuzzy and cute. It just made me so happy to see them yesterday. I was on the phone with my boss at the time and I was like, oh, there's a bumblebee. So you just kind of, from my perspective, going out and observing these animals, I think is really what is kind of that first, like, kind of trigger that sort of sets in motion this desire to save them, because you just get to observe them and you kind of put on these new glasses where you start to see them everywhere. Before I worked at Xerces, I don't think I noticed them as often, but now everywhere I look, every time I hear a bee, every bush, I'm like, oh, are there bees there? And I try to identify them and find them. And it's just very cool. You get to see a new part of the natural world that maybe you didn't notice before.
No, and so beneficial, and we don't think about it or realize it.
They're so busy. This
Busy
busy bee, I
bees.
mean, yep. There's a reason they say that.
That's right. Well, there's another program that we haven't touched on really. You touched on it, but we haven't talked about it, and that is the X Kids. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, thank you for asking. The X Kids program was a program that we developed over COVID. When I started at Xerces, you know, there's definitely been programs that our staff have done at their kids' schools or periodically, you know, we've been asked to give a presentation, but we haven't had the capacity to really focus on children as an audience. And when I came on board, I've been really inspired because I've worked for the Park Service before. I'm really familiar with the Junior Ranger program. It's predominantly for fourth graders. You know, they go and do activities at the national park and then they get a badge. And when I came to Xerces, I thought I've never seen one that was just for invertebrates and insects. And I thought it'd be really cool if we developed a program that was similar. So, you know, my job is predominantly outreach and education and managing volunteers. But when COVID happened and the lockdown, all of that sort of went away and we had time. And I thought, let's do this. So I worked with some amazing volunteers and we built this program. So it's very similar to the Junior Ranger program. There's this main character, it's a blue butterfly, and Blue takes kids on this journey to meet their incredible invertebrate friends. They must meet a bumblebee, a freshwater mussel, some beneficial insects, a firefly, and kind of go throughout these different ecosystems because it is nationwide. We wanted kids to feel at least somewhat relatable to at least one or two of those ecosystems. And then they do different activities with each of the different invertebrates as they're introduced, and they learn about their superpowers, both for themselves and for the invertebrate. And then it comes full circle at the end. They tell the story about the Xerces blue butterfly, and that now these ex-kids are actually called Xerces kids, and they are now part of the team and us all trying to save these important animals. And then they submit a survey in the mail and they get a badge. So it's a pretty cool program. If you just search X-Kids Xerces, it'll pop up. You can download it online. We offer the whole program in English and Spanish. And it's really fun. We've had everywhere from kindergartners and preschoolers with do it with their grandparents up to high school students do it. It's great for individuals. It's also great for non-formal education like camps or after school programs. And we've also had teachers adapt it for curriculum because it does reach nationwide science standards. So it's a great program. I could talk about it for a long time, but definitely if you have kids in your life, check it out. I think it's a great opportunity to get kids outside exploring the nature around them and developing an appreciation and a stewardship for nature and for insects.
It really does sound exciting. And Sandpoint is an area where we do have a significant number of kids who are homeschooled. So this might really be a fun thing for moms to look up and moms and dads to look up and integrate into their curriculum.
Yeah,
Nice.
definitely.
Yeah, well, good. That sounds exciting. I'm curious also about events. Are there events that we should be looking for related to pollinators and the Xerces Society?
We have a great webinar program. We do one webinar a month, and we're currently on a threats and solutions series. I believe our next one is next month, and I believe it's on herbicides and their impact on pollinators. And then next month, I'm really excited. We have a guest speaker, and she is talking about light pollution and is a specialist on fireflies. And so we'll wrap that series up in September. And then in October, we're going to start a new series. I'm not sure what it is yet, so I can't tell you. but all of these are also located on our YouTube channel. We have a huge YouTube channel where all the webinars are recorded. We have tons of great information, and a lot of it is also regionally specific. And then we do have courses that come up. I believe even in the Atlas program, they're going to be doing some in-person sort of training field trip days. So if, on the website that I gave you, those will be announced here shortly, but we do have a lot of just really fun online programming. So if you just go to our website and at the very top bar, click Get Involved, and you'll see webinars or events, and they'll list them out there.
Sounds fun. We are a city that, as I've mentioned, is interested in taking care of our plants and animals. And we've got a great Native Plant Society, and we've got a great gardeners group, and they really get into it. So I think that they will be interested in it. And I wanted to send a little shout out to listeners who are involved in this, but you mentioned that kids learning about invertebrates is somewhat unusual, but we have an educational center in Sandpoint called the Water Life Discovery Center, and I'm not sure if it's fifth or sixth graders, but they get a segment on invertebrates. They go out and collect in our River the Pend'Oreille and learn a bit about what's going on under the water and above it, and how and why it's important. So shout out to the
Amazing.
Sandpoint volunteers who help with that.
Yeah.
Well, Rachel, we've covered a lot, and I don't know if you have other areas you'd like to tackle, but I'd also be interested in any, stories or I just anything interesting that's happened to you in your time working with invertebrates that inspires you or makes you think about why it's been great doing what you're doing.
Oh. That's a good question. I just recently wrote an article for a newspaper in Sweden, actually.
Wow.
And they asked me to write just about environmental education and what inspired me. And I sort of told the story about what inspired me to become a biologist. And it was actually seeing Keiko from Free Willy at the Oregon Coast Aquarium as a kid. Not that I agree or at all with orcas being in captivity, I don't, but as a kid, just standing in front of this tank that was like, just felt like bigger than the world, and seeing this ginormous animal in front of me, it's just this moment. And I never forgot that. I have a terrible memory as well. So the fact that I remember it just is that, like, I remember that moment being like, I have to be a biologist. I have to study these incredible animals. And I was thinking about invertebrates, and It was a couple months after I'd started at Xerces. My boss, Matthew Shepard, he's the director of outreach and education. He took me out in to we had a short course at this local park, and we went out beforehand, and he kind of showed me how to catch a bee. And you know, he has this net, and I've never used an insect net before that I can remember, except for maybe when I was a kid. And he's just walking around, and all of a sudden, he just gets this bee in the net, and he grabs a little jar, and he just so easily puts it in the jar. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, how is he doing this? I'd be so scared the bee is going to sting me. I'd be freaking out. But he puts it in there, and then we just watch it. And it's a green metallic sweat bee. And I never knew that bees came in this like bright green metallic color. And I just was mesmerized. And it was kind of that same feeling I had as a kid, where it's just like you get to experience firsthand something that just blows your mind. And I think as an adult, we tend to have less of those experiences. And to be able to experience that as an adult, I just thought, wow, this is so cool. And so he actually taught me how to catch bees, and now I can do it. And other people are just like amazed. I feel like this bee rock star. I'm like, I can catch a bee. But that moment really inspired me. And I think just the passion that people at Xerces, the staff have for the work that they do, is so inspiring to me. I feel so fortunate to be able to work for Xerces. It's just a really amazing place to be and to be part of that mission, and to be able to work with volunteers that are a part of that, and just see the incredible heart that people have for the natural world and the time and passion that they give to that. But I think experiencing it is just so important. So like, get outside and just go sit and watch a flowering plant or a shrub and see what happens.
It's so
That's my
true.
advice.
Yeah, it is so true. You know, so many of our flowers are attractants of pollinators. And then, of course, there's a lot going on just everywhere in our yards that are so much fun if we spend a little time and sit. Rachel, why don't you go ahead and offer us the contact information one more time for Xerces?
Yeah, so our website is just xerces.org, I believe. Sorry, I'm
Yes,
having a moment. I'm
you're an
like, that's
org, I
our
believe.
website, right? Yeah,
Yes.
it's just xerces.org, and
Yes.
it's Xerces .org. And my contact information is just my full name. It's rachel.dunham@xerces.org, and you can feel free to reach out to me anytime. And all the programs and everything that we talked about are available on our website. You could just do a Google search. But yeah, reach out if you have questions. Our staff are here to help, and we have tons of publications on our website. We have new plant lists that will be coming out in the next month, and we have all sorts of brochures. So if you're doing an event and you want brochures for those event or materials, let us know. We'd be happy to send you those, including XKids. So
Yeah,
yeah.
wonderful. Well, yes, I mean, in this town, I know that we have folks that are involved with the Atlas Bumblebees, and we have the City Nature Challenge that happens, and that's sort of related, right? Are you affiliated with that too, or not? City Nature Challenge.
I
I don't
don't
think
think
you guys are
so.
that, but it's, I mean, it's again, it's a species, it's a weekend of counting species. So insects and bees get counted too, but it's a little bit different than you guys specifically monitoring, surveying the pollinators. But we have a lot going on in this town. So listeners, Xerces can be a real, a true resource for y'all. I hope you'll get on their website and look at all the resources available to them. All right, well, I'm going to conclude our interview. It's been great for listeners joining in toward the end. This is Julie Calamine, the Tuesday Morning Show host, and I've been joined by Rachel Dunham. And Rachel is the Community Engagement Coordinator for the Xerces Society. That is the Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Rachel, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much, Julie. It was great being here.